Okay, Till. Okay, I'm not used to sitting down, but I'm going to try this because today we're going to be engaged in not only, as you see, discussing Nisim and Nirot, but we're also going to use this as an opportunity to discuss the nature of mitzvot, particularly for women. So I want to begin the Chvod Arsanya to thank Smira and the OU Center. Especially, again, also the Brachfeld family for sponsoring the Shiur in loving memory and Mrs. Linda Prower Brachfeld, Aleha Shalom. And to wish all of us an Erev Yom Kippur Katan, or I should say a Yom Kippur Katan Sameach, and Erev Rosh Chodesh Sameach, and certainly for the month of Kislev, after all. So firstly, to wish everyone an Erev Rosh Chodesh Sameach, and particularly here in Eretz Yisrael, I love telling people that when the month of Kislev comes, you already feel Chanukah. Again, just go outside. In addition to selling delicious rugelach and challot for Shabbos, we're already going to find every flavor sufganiyot that you can imagine. And without further ado, then we're going to begin with our discussion of the Nisim Nirot and the nature of mitzvot, particularly when it comes to the mitzvah of Nirot Chanukah. And what this tells us with regard to the nature of the obligation of women. So we're going to begin with a very... Okay, we're going to get started then with the nature of Nisim, Nerot, and Mitzvot as we take a look at certain sugyot in the Gemara. And then we're going to not only try to appreciate them in the context of a general Af Hein Hayu Bo'oto HaNes understanding, but particularly when it comes to Nerot Chanukah. So we're going to start with the three times throughout the Talmud wherein Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, an early Amora, formulates the commandment of Apein Hayu Bo'oto HaNes, the level of obligation really for women in certain mitzvot. And this is based on really a very famous statement in the Mishnah and Kiddushin that women are exempt from all mitzvot aseh shehazman grama. We're exempt from any time-bound or time-generated mitzvah. However, explains Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Nashim chayavot b'ner Chanukah, source number one, Masechet Shabbat, sha'af hein hayu bo'oto hanes. On the most basic level, how would you interpret af hein hayu bo'oto hanes? Why do women have to light Chanukah candles, even though it's a positive time-bound mitzvah? Because they were part of it. Excellent. Beautifully said. They were part of the miracle. We take a look and we see source number two, the Gemara Msachim, again, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. We would think that a woman should be exempt from Arba Kosod on the night of the Seder because it's a time-bound mitzvah. Nonetheless, Nashim Chayavot b'Arba Kosod Talalo sh'afein hayu bo'oto hanes. And similarly, source number three, Masechet Megillah, women should really be exempt from Kriyat Megillah on Purim, but Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, once again, Nashim Chayavot b'Mikra Megillah, sh'afein hayu bo'oto hanes. Now, what we're going to see is that there are various common denominators to these three mitzvot. Can anyone think of what they are? A common denominator? Common denominator number one, they're all women involved, yafeh ma'od, meaning in the end, we're going to see that Rashi certainly interprets that these are three mitzvot, where there was an active participation of a woman in actually catalyzing the miracle. Beautiful. Another simple, technical, common denominator. Beautiful, right? These are all very physical. Again, I would say not just the miracles themselves, but the commandment, right? You have to light the Ner. You have to read the Megillah. You have to drink 4 cups of wine, a very, very physically oriented mitzvot. And we're going to refer back to that. Beautiful. Any other common denominators? All these three mitzvot, they're all mitzvot midrabanan. And therefore, when it comes to the nature of mitzvot, we're going to see if this is a particular rule with regard to rabbinically enacted commandments. And as you see, we're going to elaborate upon this as well. Another common denominator is that each of these three mitzvot doesn't just commemorate, but they're all somewhat involved in the publicizing of a miracle. Again, think of Kriyat HaMegillah, wherein various Rishonim explain, even though we don't have a mitzvah to recite Hallel on Purim, the Megillah is the Hallel. The Megillah is actually the Persume Nisa. We know that one of the aspects of reading the Megillah, we have to read it with as many people as possible because of Persum Hanes, publicizing the miracle. Why do we even light the Chanukiah outside, ideally outside of our homes. Why do we light it? And so many halachot that pertain to ensuring the maximum publicity of the miracle, wherein it's still connected somehow to the house. And lastly, even something that you're not thinking about as pursum hanes, as publicizing the miracle, such as drinking the arba kosot, because we do this within the confines of our home. Nonetheless, arba kosot, the four cups, are the basis for magid, for retelling the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, henceforth, that also is really publicizing the miracle. This is about Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. So as we continue, and to add the next page, we're going to follow the Rishonim, I'm going to say the more dominant sages who talk about what does this phrase mean? What is it that obligates the woman, Mishom Af Hein Hayu Bo'oto Hanes? The idea that they too, as beautifully said, were part of the miracle. Two different classic ways of understanding this phrase, two perspectives that emerge from early Rishonim. One, Rashi, and as we find in Masech HaPsachim, his grandson Rashbam, point to the following. Let's take a look at Rashi's terminology, source number 4. Sha'atein ayu v'oto hanes, kidam rinan, a prelude. Bizchar nashim titkaniyot shobo to hador nigalu. There was an active role that was played by the righteous women in the generations. Also with regard to Mikra Megillah, nami amrinan hachi, demishum da'al yidei Esther nigalu, v'chein gabe ner chanika b'mesachat Shabbat. In all three of these cases, there was an active role that particular women played in the redemption that these mitzvot commemorate. And there Rashi explains, notice not only in Masechet Pesachim, but source number 5 in Masechet Shabbat, what was the active role that was played by a woman on Chanukah? Shegazru Yevanim al kol betulot hanisuot libael letefsar tchila. Because all the Jewish women prior to their wedding night, we find this also in Masechet Ketuvot, were defiled by different Greek officers. Va'al yedei isha naseh nes, he seems to be alluding, and we'll see this a little later, to the story of Yehudi, to his forced to spend the night like other Jewish women, the night before her wedding with a Greek general, and then she assassinated him, and that basically helped to not only catalyze the further revolt, but ultimately bring about redemption. So according to Rashi, whether it's the righteous woman in Mitzrayim, and you see this through the stories of Sefer Shmot, we see Yocheved and Miriam and Bat Paro, it's these women who help bring about the miracle. They play an active role. Yehudi, it's obviously Esther by Purim, and that is one way of looking at the term Afein Ayu Bo'oto Hanes. Now I say, if we look at the terminology, which word in this phrase of Afein Ayu Bo'oto Hanes is Rashi focusing on? Afhein hayu bo'oto hanes, right? It's not just that, afhein bo'oto hanes. We could have said that grammatically. Rashi says the very fact that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi phrases it in an active form, afhein hayu bo'oto hanes, tells us, really divulges the nature of the mitzvah for women. They were actively part of the miracle, and therefore they have to actively commemorate the miracle that they help bring about. They're commanded by virtue of their active role. Tosfot, however, and ironically, this is from, as we know, the same family as Rashi, his grandchildren, they disagree with Rashi's reading and offer this alternative explanation. They say, v'kashed delashon af hein. They say, put aside the word hayu bo'oto hanes. The very nature of the word af, what does af mean? Afilu, that's right, even they. In other words, the phrase of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi connotes a more subordinate role that the woman played. Sha'af hein mashma shehin tfeilot. They were, as he says, ancillary. Ulapeusho hayalo lomar shehin lakach nireli. Sha'af hein hayu bisafek delashmir ulaharog. What was the nature of the female involvement? Not that they were necessarily active participants in each one of these respective miracles, but they were also included. They played a peripheral role, or actually one can argue a collective role. They were part of the community of Am Yisrael that also merited salvation. And therefore, he continues, Lekach nire li sha'abin ayu b'safek de lashmiru laharog, chen b'pesach ayu mishubadot. Just like by Purim, for example, we were in the same community of the Jewish people that would have been annihilated. There was no distinction between men and women. So too, by Pesach even, we were all enslaved to Paro. And by Hanukkah, all the Gzeirot of the Seleucid Greeks, they were on everyone. And therefore, again, it's significant, says Balei HaTosfot, to understand that the women were not necessarily primary actors, rather they were included in the salvation. And there's reference to this, even in source number 7 in the Talmud Yerushalmi, wherein the Yerushalmi says, why is it, according to Bar Kappara, that women have to also make sure that they participate somewhat in the reading of Mikra Megillah, Tzarich Lekrota Lepnei Nashim, you have to make sure to read the Megillah in front of women, Sha'ap Otam Hayu B'Safek. So here you see it even more clearly. They too were part of the uncertainty. So the Megillah is read for women as part of the general deliverance from this Safek, this possibility of annihilation. What we're going to see is that this is much more than a linguistic dispute, what we're going to place the emphasis on. Rather, it's going to tell us, right, through the phrase itself and the inclusion of women. In other words, what level really of inclusion should obligate the women? According to Rashi, they played an active role, which leads to an active obligation to commemorate. According to Balei HaTosafot, they played an ancillary role, wherein we also have to convey, not necessarily an active obligation, but we convey gratitude for the salvation due to God's miraculous intervention. So as we continue, we see also in source number 8, Balei HaTosfot to tell us, Af Hein Hayu. Now we're going to focus, as you see, on the various levels of the mitzvot. All three, we said, what do they have in common? They're all mitzvot, midrabanan. They're all rabbinically ordained mitzvot. So Tosfot says, he says, wait a second. If, in fact, women are part of the general Jewish community, and they also have to convey gratitude for the miracles that God performed, then what other miracles did God perform in addition to the Nes of Chanukah and Purim and Yitziat Mitzrayim? He says, wait, there were many mitzvot that, or many miracles that God provided for which certain mitzvot commemorate, such as, which one do you see he's going to speak about now? How about sitting in a sukkah? Or how about, that's right, if we're already mentioning Arba Kosot on Pesach, how about eating matzah, right? All of these are to remember the miracles of God through taking us out of Egypt. And therefore, one should also say, even though they're time-bound mitzvot, Af Hein Hayu Ba'oto Hanes, women should be required. We should be required to sit in a sukkah. We should be required to, well, one can even say, take the Arba Minim. We should be required, not just a because we'll see, because we're not allowed to eat chametz, we should be required to eat matzah because of Af Hein Hayu Ba'oto Hanes. So Tosfot addresses this in Gemara Pesachim. He says, why is it then that women should be patur from sukkah, even though Af Al Gav to Af Hein Hayu Ba'oto Hanes? He says, because Sukkot, and for this matter, matzah, taking the Arba Minim, they're all mitzvot, midoraita. In other words, Tosfot explains in the Sechah Pesachim that the rule of Af Hein Hayu Ba'oto Hanes, once a woman is exempt from a mitzvah because it's time-bound, when Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says she's obligated, Tosfot explains, that's a rabbinic statement based on rabbinically ordained mitzvot. But the rabbis don't have the power to obligate a woman midoraita. In other words, the rabbis have the power to obligate a woman within the rabbinic framework, but not within a biblical framework. And therefore, Af Hein Hayu Ba'oto Hanes only applies a priori to mitzvot midrabanan. However, let's take a look at Tosfot in Masechah Megillah. There he says something fascinating. He says, Gabei matzah yesh makshet. He says, matzah gives a different explanation here. Why is it that Chazal go out of their way and say, even though matzah, eating matzah on Pesach is also a positive time-bound mitzvah and women should be exempt? And in the end, Chazal say, why aren't women exempt? because they're required in the opposite, in not eating chametz. So just like, why are we required in all the mitzvot asay on Shabbat? Because Zachor v'Shamor b'dibor achad ne'emru, because they were said at the same time. So Chazal extrapolate from here, kol sheyeshno b'shmira, yeshna b'sechira. Anyone who's obligated in the negative commandments of that mitzvah is also obligated, even though it may be a time-bound mitzvah, also in the positive commandments. So Tosfot says, why do we have to say that women are obligated in matzah just because they're obligated in not eating chametz? What would have been easier to say? Women are obligated in matzah, zecher liyitziat Mitzrayim, because everyone together? Afen hayu boto hanes, because we were part of the miracle. So Tosfot explains, even though in a source number 8 in Masech HaPesachim, he said, now it doesn't work within a biblical framework. Here in Megillah, he says, because havetana lo mechayve ela midrabanan, even if afen hayu boto hanes would apply to biblical commandments, in the end, they would only mandate that women have to fulfill them on what level? A rabbinic level. Once again, either Atina Yubotwanes only works within a rabbinic framework, and even if it does work within a biblical framework, it can only obligate a woman on what level? Rabbinically, midrabanan. And here Tosfot says, we don't want to obligate a woman midrabanan at matzah. Matzah is a priori, a deoraita mitzvah. Let's keep it on a deoraita level. And this is fascinating then, because Rabbi Yosef Engel explains that's the nature of Afen Hayu Boto Hanes. It either only applies within a rabbinic infrastructure, or it's only part of, really, a rabbinic authority, he says. It's part of the rabbinic decree authority. So the sages cannot obligate a woman, even rabbinically, on a Torah-level mitzvah, from the vantage of inclusion in the miracle. So it keeps women, we'll even say this, the participation, the obligation, on a rabbinic level. Now what we're going to see is that Tosfot says, well, if that's the case, then we should really expand this beyond these three. It shouldn't just be Mikra Megillah, and it shouldn't just be Nerot Chanukah, and it shouldn't just be Arba Kosot on Pesach. There are other, even mitzvot midrabanan, that women should be required in, because they also should offer gratitude. So what's the greatest expression of this? When should women offer gratitude? Hallel. They should say Hallel. And based on Afen Hayu Bo Tohanes, Tosfot says, why should women be turot from saying Hallel on Sukkot? So he explains, because all of these, and he says, Shani Hallel de Pesach Bal Hanes, Afen Hayu Bo Tohanes. It seems that really a woman should be exempt from Hallel on Sukkot and Shavuot because it's a time-bound mitzvah. But Hallel on Pesach is different because it is coming to commemorate a miracle, and they too were part of the miracle, whereas by the other ones, by Sukkot and from, as we see, Shavuot, it's not necessarily that they were part of a miracle, albeit there are other Rishonim that say, no, women really should be obligated in Hallel on Sukkot, Hallel on Shavuot, because of Afen Hayu Bo Tohanes. So much so that the Maharil says another Din Drabanan, the Ta'anit Bechorot, on Erev Pesach, he says, women, the firstborn woman, should also be obligated because of Afen Hayu Bo Tohanes. And in fact, there really is a machloket in this regard. Let's continue with the Sefer HaYashar. Also, the compilation of tshuvot of the Balei HaTosafot, and they explain similarly that how about on Shabbat, women should also be obligated in shalashudis, in eating su'udah shlishit, the third meal on Shabbat, and they should also be required in lechem mishnah, and eating two loaves of bread. There go our diets. But there's no such thing as a Shabbos diet anyway. And Tosfot says, because what do these mitzvot commemorate? The Lechem Mishnah, they're drabanan, and they commemorate the man. Were women part of the miracle of the man? Not active roles in bringing the man, but we also have to offer gratitude. So now we understand Tosfot on one hand limits to a rabbinic mitzvot, but basically expands it to other rabbinic mitzvot. What we're now going to be involved in, starting source number 13, is we're going to appreciate how the scope is going to be narrowed, how we're going to go back to these three mitzvot and see what's so special and unique with regard to these three, So we start with the Maharami Rutenberg, who, as we know, from Ashkenaz, and he says, Lo Shayach Tama. He's referring back to the Balei HaTosfot, and he says, Sha'af hein hayu boto hanes, elahecha da mitzvah ba'a al hanes she'ira li Yisrael, shaya b'sakana v'nimletu. He says, no, af hein hayu boto hanes. It's not just that women have to give gratitude for a miracle that they were also benefiting from. Rather, he mentions another common denominator between these three specific mitzvot, namely that these were stories and salvations of an imminent threat. When you have an imminent threat, that's when the women have to offer gratitude. Man, and even if you want to say the halal, and again, those weren't necessarily imminent threats. When were imminent threats? By Purim, by the story of Hanukkah, by Yitziat Mitzrayim. It's only when women themselves were part of the danger and escaped it, Atenu Yeboto Anis then only applies to miracles that save the Jewish people from an imminent threat. So that brings us back into the category of just these three particular mitzvot. Another explanation, which I think is rather fascinating, and one can even argue ironic, offered by Rav Yosef Dover Soloveitchik, Zechrono Levracha, is as he says that, you can look in the Hebrew or the English, he says, Nir'et Pashut. He says, even though I understand Tosfot's reasoning, that once Avinu Yeboto Hanes is going to obligate women rabbinically in mitzvot, and really it should be an expression of gratitude, he says, if you look carefully, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is only applying Afin Ayubo Tohanes, Shayach Rach Lautan HaMitzvot Tohanes, Hudin V'Chalut B'Fnei Atzman Be'etzem Kiyum HaMitzvah, Di'ika Ba Kiyum Shel Nes U'Pirsume Misa. He says, what's the common denominator between all these three? Part of the component of the fulfillment of this mitzvah is pursuing Misa, that you have to publicize it. He says, it's not just like Hallel, wherein you want to offer gratitude to God. Why are women going to be obligated, especially if it's from the perspective of Tosfot, not just that women were actively involved, but that they also have to offer gratitude. So yes, it's true, we always have to offer gratitude, but women are exempt if it's time bound, except when the gratitude must be expressed on a public level. When it has to be expressed on a public level, then are women exempt from the public? And the answer is no. Women are part of the public. If we're going to publicize this, then when we want to have a rally on Balfour, what do? We bring everyone. We don't say, no, again, sorry, this rally is for men only. We want to bring everyone here. And therefore, Rav Soloveitchik explains beautifully. He says the nature of this gratitude is going to be a public one. And therefore, of course, women have to be included in this because that's the nature of the commandment itself, that it must be pursuing Misa. So here's a little bit of the irony, because generally, when we think of the role of women, what do we think of? Their focus is on the home. Comes these three mitzvot of gratitude that must be performed outside of the home. And that's why Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi has to come along and say, woman, get out of the home and light your Hanukkah candles. Get out of the home and participate in the Pursumei Nisa of Kriyat HaMegillah. Go in front of everyone, even though Anna, it's a huge Seder, and go and be Misaper Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim. Right? You should also have numerous divrei Torah to say on that night. Everyone has to hold those arba koso, drink them, retell the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. So as you notice, the Rav distinguishes, and you can look at this more in depth, between mitzvot that include commemoration of a miracle, generally what he calls the kiddush of the mitzvah, and those whose fulfillment themselves actually publicize that miracle. That's where women are included, and that they must publicize the miracle further. So when a mitzvah generally commemorates a miracle, the commemoration can be peripheral to its fulfillment, that not everyone is necessarily included. Everyone included in the miracle is obligated to fulfill that. However, when the publicizing of the miracle is central, and when the woman, Atenayu Bo Tohanes, When a Pirsum Hanis is part of the fulfillment, then women are certainly not going to be exempt. They have to be part of this as well. So we're going to continue now and then ask ourselves, okay, if women are obligated, Mishum Atem Ayu Boto Hanis, and this is on a rabbinic level, then how does their level compare to that of a man? What is actually their level of obligation when it comes to fulfilling the mitzvah for the sake of discharging the mitzvah, right? Who can be motzi whom? So we already saw that according to Balei HaTosfot, even if it was d'oraita mitzvah, would only obligate a woman rabbinically. So let's just look at the rabbinic mitzvot. We basically have three options that are expressed that we're going to see in just a moment. One is that, and here you have to put your thinking caps on for a minute to understand how these three mechanisms work. One is that women are exempt from time-bound mitzvot. And then when Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi operates, Afein Hayu Bo Tohanis, what happened to that mitzvah that I was hitherto exempt from? One option is it comes back. Right? It comes back full force, meaning I was exempt. Afena Yubo Tuanis does what? Revives it, right? Puts me back on. No, sorry, you were never exempt. You're actually obligated on the same level. If I'm obligated on the same level, then can I be motzi a man, let's say in Neirot Chanukah? Yes, everyone see why this is significant, because due to, I just had to deal with tunnel traffic coming from Gush Etzion, and this always happens. And I have to say that I love Hanukkah, just a little stressful, because we're makbid in our family to light candles at Shkia. So I have to leave work, usually it's about an hour and a half before Shkia, in order to make sure to get home by Shkia. And even then, I get butterflies in my stomach just thinking about this. And I have to deal with all the traffic that's there. And sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes I'm home and it's my husband who will say, Shani, you light candles. And you light on time and thereby at least discharge me of the obligation of lighting on time. So again, that's the question. Can it work that way? So if we say that Afina Yubo Tohanis restores the original obligation, which is a rabbinic obligation, then does it work? Yes. What if Athena Yubotones, women are exempt because it's a time-bound mitzvot? Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says now they're required because of Athena Yubotohanes. One can argue that Athena Yubotohanes, they're reobligated, but not necessarily on the same level. As a matter of fact, maybe, third option, they're obligated, not on a regular rabbinic level, they're obligated, not Mishum Neirot Chanukah. What are they obligated in now? Afen Hayu Bo Tohanes. That it actually has a different nature, that is a lesser rabbinic enactment. Just in case, we didn't see it, we're going to see it inside right now. Does Afen Hayu Bo Tohanes obligate women rabbinically on the same Midra Banan level as men? Or does it create a new type of obligation called Atein Hayu Bo Tohanes, which would be lesser than the men's rabbinic level, which would not allow her to discharge him of mitzvot? Let's take a look at the Chavot Ya'ir. We begin with his, who says, Kevan Dehim Chayavim, Mita'am Ba'alma. He says, what obligates a woman? A peripheral reason called Afin Hayu Bo Tohanes, whereas men are obligated in rabbinic mitzvot because of a Torah obligation. Lo tasur mikol asher yagidu l'chayaminu smol. So that's like a deoraita. So the rabbinic is closer to a deoraita. Afin Hayu Bo Tohanes is totally rabbinic, is totally midrabanan, and therefore he says it's less than a regular midrabanan. And therefore, a woman cannot be motzi a man, he says, for example, in the mitzvah of a Kriyat Megillah to Esther, the woman, he says, can't be motzi a man. Let's take a look at source number 16, the Ritva. The Ritva says, really? Once Afena Yubo Tohanis brings back her obligation, it restores it on what level? On the same level as men. And therefore, according to the Ritva, can women be motzi men in all of these? He says, yes, women are obligated now on the same level. They're obligated in the same way. So for example, Arba Kosod, everyone has to drink. Mikra Megillah, technically women can be motzi a man. There may be some other aspects, kol isha, gena, maybe it's niut, kvot hatzibur, but technically on the basic level, women can be motzi, women can light the candles for their husband, source number 17. Rashi, bitupim of the mecholot, he says, yeah, that's exactly the point. Remember he said that women played an active role. He says, not just in the actual bringing about of the miracle, but the tzitkaniot shebedor HaKadosh Baruch Hu osa lehem nisim v'otiyu tupim mitzrayim. In other words, the mitzvah itself then is going to carry with it the participation of women. One can even argue that this serves as a nice precedent for what Rav Soloveitchik says, meaning the minhagim, the stories, the traditions include the women, and therefore they have an effect on halacha. In other words, if women were so much part of these stories, we call the Megillah, Megillah to Esther, right? Nashim Tzitkaniyot, it's so clear that the women are the dominant active players in canalizing Yitziat Mitzrayim. And Hanukkah, albeit you may not see Yehudit as a star, what we clearly see is that Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi is saying that women's participation is crucial to not just the miracle, not just to the history, not just to the tradition, but it's going to ultimately manifest itself even with regard to the technical aspects of her commandedness in these various obligations. Rabbanit O. Rivka Weingart, who lives here in Yerushalayim, says beautifully that women are obligated in the Hanukkah lights, even though it's a time-bound positive mitzvah, because Afein Hayu Botu Anis, they too were part of the miracle. And because, she adds Rashi, because the miracle came about through a woman, the divine miracle cloaks human dedication. And it is in our power to bring about that revelation. In other words, that the halacha wants women to be involved in the mitzvah in order to bring about the greater expression of that commandment. So one need not wait for the miracle. And she says this should inspire all of us to recognize that it's in our power as women to make miracles happen, not just to wait around. We have it within our power. We can create the space. Basically, halacha is saying, "No, woman, right? Where are you? You know, when it comes to not just these mitzvot, but any other potential miracles, whenever we desire, and when we fulfill these mitzvot, it basically sparks a consciousness and a sensitivity within each and every one of us that we can, in fact, shape not just our identity, but we can bring about miracles for the entire Jewish people. So, the mitzvot themselves are supposed to sensitize us to that. We're going to spend the remaining time of our shiur discussing then particularly the halachot of Nerot Chanukah, the women's, not just participation, but the women's role in fulfilling this mitzvah of lighting Chanukah candles. So we turn to page 6, where we're going to discuss the nature of mitzvah and Chanukah lighting. Once again, source number 18, that we're very familiar with, and wherein we know mitzvah ner Chanukah ish ubeito. We're going to see a very unusual development, namely that Chazal will teach us, based on the famous story of Chanukah, the victory of the Hashmonaim in 164 BCE, who came back to a defiled Beis HaMikdash. And the first thing that they did was light the menorah, even before they were able to rededicate the Mikdash, as a sign that this military victory is really coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what's interesting is that Chazal tell us that there were three stages in the development of the mitzvah to mark this historical, miraculous occasion. Number one, three levels on which the household is going to fulfill the obligation. And here, this is a separate shiur, recognizing how Chanukah, which on one hand is a miracle that has to be publicized outside, but not too outside. Believe it or not, you would think that Chabad, you know, with the Chanukiyot on, you know, on the tops of their cars, that's the best way to fulfill the mitzvah, because that's Pursumei Nisa. What does halacha tell us? No, no, no. You want to publicize it, but the publicizing of the miracle still has to be linked to the home. It really is the most home sweet home holiday. I always tell my seminary students, this together with Pesach are the two holidays when you're going to be the most homesick, right? And it should be that way. Again, I try to say it with a smile, but it should be that way, because not just that you miss your mother's lactas and sufganiyot, but it's a mitzvah of the bayit, just like Ner Ish Ubeto, and by Pesach, Selevet Avot Selabaya, they're very home-based. So we have to publicize a miracle, but connect it to the home, because that's ultimately what the Greeks were trying to undermine. So let's take a look and see the development of how we're going to commemorate the miracle together with the salvation of the home. Stage number one, Mitzvah Chanukah, Ner Ish Ubeto. What does that mean? Ner Ish Ubeto, one person per household lights one candle. Hamehadrin, but then really Chazal said you should intensify and beautify this mitzvah more. Ner lekol echad ve'echad. What's the next level? Everyone in the house lights one candle. Hamehadrin min hamehadrin. Beit Shammai says now yom rishon madlik shmona mikan ve'elach pochet v'holech. What's the mahadrin min hamehadrin? Don't necessarily light one candle, light eight, and either eight going as Beit Shammai says, descending, and 8, 7, 6, 5, Beit Hillel, Yom Rishon, Madlik Echad, Mikan Ve'elech, Mosif Aholech, or as we pass in like a Beit Hillel, Malim V'Kodesh Ve'in Moridin, we go 1 to 8. Now what we're going to find is that even within this Mahadrin, Min HaMahadrin, there's a machloket, there's a dispute. What does this mean? That we're going to light based on the number of days, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, how does that actually work? Meaning, is that per member of household or is even one? Okay, let's take a look at the Rambam. Kama nerot to madlik b'chanuka, and the nafka mina would be, how many boxes of candles do I have to buy? Gana mitzvata sheyeh kol bayit ubayit madlik ner echad. He says the basic mitzvah was that each household light one candle. Ben shayu anshe habayit merubim, ben shelo hayabau ela adam achad. He says initially it was, even if there are 10 people in the house, you light one candle every night. Hamahaderet hamitzvah madlik nerot kiminyan anshe habayit. The next would be you have 10 people in the home. How many candles do you light every night? 10. Hamahadrin, let's take a look. Again, and he says, I left out something very important. Again, Hamahadir kiminyan anshe habayit ner lekol echad v'echad bein anashim bein nashim. Are women included in this 10? Yes. Hamahader yoter alze vose mitzvah min hamuchar. You want to do the mitzvah the best way possible. Madlik ner lekol echad balayla harishon. What does that mean? Madlik ner lekol echad balayla harishon. So he uses the singular, right? One lights a candle every night per each member of the household per the night, right? The night that's there. So if I have 10 members in my household, the Rambam seems to say that what should happen? The member, the madlik, one person should light, ready for this, 10 chanukiyot for the 10 people in the house. And the first night, the head of the household would light one, right, for each member of the household. The second night, he's going to light two for each member of the household. Let's take a look then. Each member, basically, he says, madlik umosif olech b'chol layla b'layla ner echad. So each member is going to have a set, basically, of increasing candles. Tosfot explains it a little differently. Hamahadrin min hamahadrin. He says, according to Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, again, whether you go up or go down, and he says, how does this work? And a candle is made. It's clearly recognizable. He's increasing, decreasing. He says, this is going to be more difficult because, again, if there is a candle for each night for every member of the household, then it's going to be really hard to see what night of Hanukkah it is. And therefore, he says, if he makes a candle for each person, even if he adds from here on, it's not going to be recognizable. So he says the candles, again, should correspond either to the number of household members or to the night of Chanukah. And sure enough, in a very, I'm going to say, and somewhat of an exception to the rule, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't pass in like the Rambam, but rather like Tosfot. Balayla rishon madlik echad. Mikan ve'elech mosich v'holech echad v'cholayla. Ad shebelel hacharon yeh shmone. According to the Shulchan Aruch, according to Mahadrin min HaMahadrin, it's more important to know, like Beit Hillel or Beit Shammai, what night of Hanukkah it is. And therefore, what does Shulchan Aruch say? Don't confuse it with having 10 Chanukiyot. Because if you're looking at the first night, it seems that what night is it? Night number 10. And therefore, he says, just light one Chanukiyah, like Tosfot says. Light one Chanukiyah, so that even if Rabbim B'nai Habayit lo yadliku yoter. The Ramah, however, right, the Ashkenazi posek, Paskins like the Sephardi Rambam. And here, the Chanukah is such a chag of achdut. It's beautiful. Again, the Ramah says, Yeshomim, tochol achad mibnei habayit yadlik. That no, you need 10 Chanukiyot for each member of the household. V'chein ha-menhag pashut, v'yizaru li'tein kol achad v'achad ne'rota bin makom yuchad. He says, how do I avoid Tosfot confusion? Don't put all 10 Chanukiyot together. Just make sure that they're separated sufficiently so that you can still tell that on night one, that each one is lighting one, on night seven, that everyone is lighting seven. Kedei sheyeh heker kama nerot madlikin. So again, the Ramah, Paskins like the Rambam, that each one should light, each one in their distinct location, and every, but he goes on to say that it's every member, that it's not that the head of the household, that the Rambam said in singular, it's not that the head of the household goes around and lights 10 separate Chanukiyot for everyone. Rather, who should light? Everybody should light. That's the idea behind the Ramah. And we see this also particularly, and he includes women, right? The Rambam said women as well. So when we look then at the ensuing sources, we see, particularly when it comes to Hanukkah, that yes, women, we're not just an ancillary part. As Tosfot says, we have so many Rishonim that talk about what is the significance of women. Aneirot Hanukkah, source number 22, the Kolbo, who says that why are women obligated in the Hanukkah candle? Why should they light their own Chanukiah? Because, and not only was it that they were part of all the gzeirot, all the decrees of the Yevanim, but rather Yehudit, according to the Agadah, she was the very beautiful daughter of Yochanan Kohen Gadol. She was the sister of Matityahu, the aunt of all the B'nai HaMakabim, and this elusive Greek, Antiochus, ordered that she lie with him. So as she fed, this is the famous source, that she fed cheese as she, so that he would grow thirsty, just like Yael in the story of Shoftim, and he would drink and he fell asleep, and then she had decapitated him, brought his head to Yerushalayim. When the army saw that their hero died, they ran away, and that's why not only do women have to light Neirot Chanukah, but that's why we have a lot of milchiks, right? Cheese dishes on Chanukah. Rashi already alluded to this. He didn't mention Yehudit, and one can argue that the reason he didn't mention the name Yehudit is because it was actually all the women who were willing to do something like this, or like the women in Mitzrayim, or because he didn't want to embarrass Yehudit in such a context. But once again, as a woman had a particular gezerah against them, they stood against this. The virgin brides did not sleep necessarily with the Greek officers. The Rif, the Ran explains this as well on the Rif, and he says, this is the Midrash, Ava, the daughter of Yochanan. We find this also in Megillat Ta'anit, that Batachat Haya Lematityahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Some say that she was actually the Chashmonaim's sister. She was Yochanan's daughter, and she was supposed to get married, and she was taken to the Kastarin to be defiled. And that's when she said, enough is enough. According to the Otsar Midrashim, source number 26, she actually got up. You should read this, this Midrash. Very, very powerful. Right? And she, just like other women during that time, and according to this, her name wasn't even Yehudit, but actually Hannah. Hannah and her seven sons. Here, the Otzar Midrashim say it was Hannah, and the daughter of Matityahu. Right, an interesting conservation of different personalities here. Hannah got up. And before she was given over to the Greek officer, she ripped off her royal cloak. She stood exposed and again in front of her parents and her brothers, and they were ashamed. And she says, look, Anna, here I stood before you, and you're not doing anything, right? Shimon and Levi stood up for their sister Dina. And that's what finally prompted Yehuda, Yochanan, Yonatan, Shimon, Elazar, the young Kohanim, to go ahead and put their trust in Hashem. She, like Dvorah HaNeviah, is the one who inspired her own brothers to go and revolt against the undermining of a basic Jewish law, the purity of the home. And according to Otzar HaMidrashim, it was really Chana Yehudit, again, this Bata Kohen Gadol, Hua was the one not just to bring about a miracle, literally catalyze the entire revolt. And therefore, we understand all the more how the women are not just part of this, how the Rama says women should be lighting their own Chanukiah. So now I'm going to take a poll, and we're going to see then the last two sections, basically. How many of you really do light your own Chanukiah? Yafe. Excellent. And now you're going to see, now you know why you do it. For all those who didn't raise your hands, now we're going to see why you don't do it. So let's take a look. Again, now we're looking now at source number 27. We said, what if a woman lives alone? She's, again, a widow or a single woman living together. So they're clearly nashim chayavot. They have to, even if she is an almana, balat bayit, yodat levarech, he tadlik v'tiftor b'nei beita. Obviously, if women are living together, she's going to discharge all their obligations because a woman certainly lights the Chanukah candles. Ibn Rabbi Zeira, source number 28, said, initially, when I was at yeshiva, I would participate, he says, in the Asanai, in the host lighting. And once I married, I said, now I don't have to pay because they light for me in my home. In other words, what is Rabbi Zeira saying? Who is in fact the head of his household? His wife. He says, I don't have to pay because she's my wife and she can discharge the obligation. And based on this, the Mishnah Berurah, the Chafetz Chaim paskens, k'she'in ha'ish b'bayit, when the husband, for whatever reason, isn't home, then ha'isha is going to be the one, the wife is going to be the one to light because she has, according to this, the same level of a chovah, and she's going to say it with a bracha. So the man relies on his wife's lighting. All different questions arise. What if ultimately he knows he's going to come back home, you know, in 20 minutes? Should he still have her? Is he completely discharged by her bracha? So as I said, my husband says, Shani, you light on time. Have me in mind so that what mitzvah does he technically get? Not just lighting, but lighting on time. When he comes home, does he also light? Yes. Again, to make sure, mahadrin min ha-mahadrin, that every member of the household lights. The Ravan says, how about when the husband is home? Does that still work? So he says, when the husband is there, he takes priority because he too is obligated. But if the husband's not home, obviously the woman is going to light. The Mishnah Berurah says, no, actually they have the same level of obligation. So even if the husband is home, can the woman be motzi the man? Yes, says she can. But then he says, ultimately, she can, but she wouldn't necessarily because he explains in source number 32, the reason even if she can discharge her husband is take a look at what the Bior Halacha says. Isha mevarechet lebala, just like a woman can recite Berachat HaMazon for her husband, but Chazal said that it's not necessarily good, rather tavo ma'ara l'adam sheishto banav mevarchin lo, that the man can say Berachat HaMazon. Once upon a time, not everyone had a bencher. So if the woman was saying Berachat HaMazon for the husband, what does that mean? He didn't know Berachat HaMazon. And Chazal say, oy, that is not good. Not good for the chinuch of your children. Again, men, please learn Berachat HaMazon. Women also. But men, please learn Berachat HaMazon. So Rav David Orbach explains, he says, that's where we see that it was a particular issue for Berachat HaMazon. Berachat HaMazon, there was a preference that the man also know the words and that even if the woman can discharge, that the man should definitely say it. He says, well, when it comes to Meirot Chanukah, it doesn't take a lot to light a Chanukah candle. So both are fully obligated. Either one, this is Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach's nephew, either one can light and discharge the other one, even in their presence, he explains. And with this, we're going to see then, not only on page number 10, source number 34, we now get to why some women don't light. And can this still be Mahadrin? If I thought the whole nature of Mahadrin is that everyone has their own Chanukiah. So women are counted individually. So shouldn't they have their own Chanukiah? So what's interesting is that even the Rambam says Madlik Neirot, right? It's not clear if Achen Hayu Bo'oto Hanes, as we said, is ancillary or if she's an active participant, but he says men and women are going to be lighted for. Right? So definitely they're included in the household. Let's take a look at Eliyahu Rabbah, source number 35. He says, Ishto kigufo veina b'chlal mahadrin. Now, when it comes to counting the members of the family, that really, who is the woman? She's her own unit, but she's also, when it comes to a mitzvah of the bayit, she's part of the bayit. Ishto Kagufo. She's considered one unit with her husband. And therefore, does the wife necessarily really need her own Chanukiah? According to this source, no, the husband and wife form a single unit. It's not a separate. She's part of Mahadran together with her husband. And the Chatzam Sofer therefore says, even though women are technically part of the Mahadran, they're part of Ner Ishu Beito, he says, to a certain degree, the exact opposite of Rav Soloveitchik. He says, even though we could consider her her own, the fact that that Nerot Chanukah involves going out, outside your home, into Rishut HaRabim, into the public domain, for Persume Nisa. He says, Dafka, for a Persume Nisa mitzvah like this, the woman should consider herself part of her husband, Neri Ishu Beito, for Tzniut purposes. The Chida disagrees and says, on the contrary, that for Chinuch purposes, he says, no, this doesn't make sense, what the Chatzam Sofer says, because even though a woman is Ishto Kegufo, he says, I agree, woman and a man, they're supposed to form one entity. He says something is missing, because Chanukah is also a mitzvah of chinuch. This is a time to educate our children. And therefore, he says, in beautiful terminology, he says, Liot Ishto Kegufo. In this case, he says, I love the idea that men and women are one unit, but chasure mechsera, something is chaser, ki megarat mehatze etzaim. Who is she detracting from? She may be enhancing her relationship with her husband, but it's Chanukah. It's a time of chinuch. Who does she have to think about as well? Her children. And therefore, why should she light? For her children. For her children to see, afin hayubo tohanes. For her daughters who are there to realize you should be lighting Chanukah candles yourselves because you have no Ishto Kegufo at this point. And the Shaar HaTzion quotes this and he says, Ishto Kegufo, and therefore, on one hand, she doesn't have to light, but she's able to. And not only is she able to, but she can voluntarily light on behalf of the whole household. That's why Rav Schechter quoted Rav Soloveitchik, who already we saw believes this is a mitzvah persuming Nisa. So the more Chanukiyot, the better. What do you think? Yes, that's part of the expression of the miracle. And therefore he says, even married women, because of persuming Nisa, married women should light for themselves. The more Chanukiyot there are in the house, outside of the house, the better. Rav Lichtenstein said as well, that really, again, it is customary for women to light. He says, this is what we do in our home. And now also to teach that women are just like men with regard to this mitzvah. And it's important to educate the children of Afin Hayubo Tohanis. They'll never see that expression unless they appreciate this as well. Personal story with Rav Lichtenstein. And with this, we're basically going to end our first year married. So I knew these two opinions. So we went to our posik. We went to Rav Lichtenstein. We said, Rav Lichtenstein, we just got married. Should I light my own Chanukiah? And this was before he came out with this statement that I knew, the machloket, Ishto Kegufo, is, should I light together with my husband? He said, Shani, Ishto Kegufo, you should light one Chanukiah together with your husband. And I walked out thinking, that's so strange, because how about for Suminisa, but... Okay, that's what Rav Lichtenstein said. And it was so strange growing up in a household where I always had my own Chanukiah, all of a sudden going down to one and lighting together with him. Okay, the next year, I'm going to be honest with you, it really bothered me. So I went back and I asked. And he said, no, of course you should light your own Chanukiah. I said, but Rav Lichtenstein, last year you told me Ishto Kegufo to light as one. He said, yes. Who said that? It was your first year of marriage. Your first year of marriage, you should learn the concept of Ishto Kegufo, that you're really one unit. He said, now, do whatever you want. He said, now, of course you should go back to lighting your own, but that's only after you see your house as one unit. And a beautiful chinuch message in that. And lastly, if we're talking about the bayit, then as we know, there is almost this tension on Chanukah, both with regard to the mitzvot themselves of lighting the Chanukiah. We have Persume Nisa, but it has to be linked to the home. So what do? We do both. We light it in shul, and then we didn't discharge our obligation because it has to be linked to the home. But if we light it in shul because of Persume Nisa, then are women part of that Persume Nisa? And the Ben Ish Chai, again, the Rav Pa'alim tells us specifically that yes, the whole reason that you light in shul is because of Persumei Nisab, Nerot Chanukah, and therefore the more people, the better. Are women considered part of the tzibur? Yes. And then we come home and we're considered our own, also individual units, or Ishto Kegufo, one unit with our husband. And in our bayit, we once again light, not only expressing the commandment itself, but that the fulfillment of the commandment is part of the nature of Afen Hayu Ba'oto Hanes, sensitizing us not only to remember the miracles that we were so much part of and catalyzed, but once again, that we can bring about new miracles of Yeshua today. Chag Sameach.